is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon, Dr. Wesley Francis. Good evening, Dr. Francis.
Good evening, Greg. Good evening, Bahamas.
We're here again with a very interesting topic. We're here trying to be proactive and try to promote preventative medicine. As I always say, the health of the nation is the wealth of the nation, and knowledge is key. So we are speaking not just to men, although we like to reach out to men a lot because they're the ones that are falling way behind in terms of taking control of their own health and looking after themselves. And in a way, this is a topic that will pertain to men, but also to couples. We're going to talk about the looming, what we call spermageddon, worsening male infertility worldwide, and that includes in the Bahamas. And it can be a very perplexing problem. It can be a very depressing issue for both men and for women in terms of trying to conceive. A lot of times it feels like it's very unfair. They have men in this country all over the place, everywhere you look, who don't know what a condom is or don't care to know what a condom is, and having a dozen kids with a dozen women. And then there are men out there who are dedicated to their family, who are dedicated to the Bahamas and society, and involved in their church, and all they want to do more than anything in the world is to have a child with the woman they love, and to raise that child in a nuclear family. And a lot of times life is very unfair. I'm sure you and I both even personally know a lot of friends, a lot of colleagues who have gone through that. It's very, very trying on the relationship itself. It can be very depressing to the woman itself, particularly they're always doing pregnancy tests every month. They may have a little hope because their period is late for a couple days, and then disaster happens and they get their period and they're crying for days on end, and it can put a lot of stress on the male as well, because he's going to feel like he's inadequate. He's not performing his duty as a male. That can lead to a lot of issues superficially and even on the deeper level. So we want to address, why is there a problem with male infertility? What can be done in terms of changing a lifestyle, in terms of maybe what are some of the medical issues that can related to male infertility? But the take-home message is that if we're looking just at male infertility, because of assisted reproductive technology, it's gone so far over a number of years that on a typical ejaculate, you expect it to have 250 to 300 million sperm. Sperm count alone is not the only parameter that's important in terms of male fertility. We'll talk about that as well. But let's just say in terms of, instead of having 300 million sperm in an ejaculate, you have 20. All you need is a couple sperm that are viable.
When you say 20, you mean 20 million.
No, I'm talking 20. even 20 sperm. I mean, if we can go through the ejaculate and a reproductive assistant technologist expert find the sperm.
If you find one, that's what's okay.
You can do in vitro fertilization. Even if the sperm has no movement, no motility, we can do ICSI, which is intracytoplasmic spermatic injection. So you can literally get a couple sperm instead of having 300 million viable sperm, pick that one out, actually do chromosomal testing on that, DNA testing on that, make sure that it's the There's no denaturing of the DNA itself. It's perfect sperm. And you can actually inject it directly into the embryo and then reimplant it in the uterus.
So a couple of things. So you said that this is on the rise. What kind of numbers are we looking at?
In the last 40 years, the fertility worldwide is actually halved. Studies have shown that conclusively. So instead of having, we're used to having 47 million sperm presently per mil. And it used to be 99 million sperm per mil 40 years ago. So there are many things at play. There are environmental issues. There's socioeconomic issues. There's a rise in certain uses of recreational drugs that we'll get into, a rising use of alcohol as well. Of course, rising levels of obesity also play a role as well.
So when you say this decrease in number of sperm, is that overall, I mean, in the last 40 years, or that's just affecting a certain part of the population demographic?
It goes across the board. All racial demographics, all ages, if you were.
You're saying the young fellas today
are half as fertile as they were.
So my grandfather had more sperm than I do now. That's what you say.
Per se, when you look across the board, every individual is an individual. But yes, you can say that you're a couple generations ago, right. The males in your family were more fertile than the men in your generation or yourself now, which is a frightening trend, because if this trend continues...
Yeah, if it continues, then it's going to keep going down, right?
We're going to have major issues. But it's important to state that sperm count on sperm analysis is actually an imperfect proxy for fertility. So even if you have an abnormal sperm analysis, first of all, you have to have it performed correctly. Not every lab is as good as the next in terms of actually doing sperm analysis, because some of them don't do them very often at all. And obviously, there are those who are trained specifically in doing sperm analysis. And it's not like they look, you'll have an ejaculate of 3 mils or 4 mils. It's not like they actually go and count every sperm that mil. They'll take a sample of it.
Right.
They'll count the sperm in that sample, and then they'll multiply that to give an estimate of the number of sperm. So there are many men who will do a sperm analysis over and over, and they have no problems with having children. They'll have some men who have perfect sperm analysis, and they have exceeding difficulty in trying to conceive a child. So we look at male factors, we look at female factors. When 15% of couples are of a failure to conceive within 1 year. So you don't really worry at all for at least 1 year, because even if things are all perfect, all parameters are perfect, all conditions are perfect, we're talking about two 20-year-olds who are picture-perfect health, no illnesses, no drug use, no alcohol, no nicotine smoking or vaping or anything else, perfect body mass index, you only have a 15% chance of conceiving a live fetus every single month. So statistically, obviously some people are going to get lucky. Like I say, you get the bullseye sometimes on honeymoon, but it'll usually take you 12 months, 1 year to conceive. If there's a problem beyond that, then we look at what may be wrong. And it could be female factors as well. Sometimes it's both. They say half the time it's male, half the times it's female, and quarter of the time it's both. So we have to investigate both the male. A male will be investigated by a urologist and a female by a gynecologist, and we work in conjunction.
So let's say you're at that 1 year mark, and you know you meet the criteria for workup. What is the basic screening for the couple? Like, how does that start, and how does that one actually, gain access to that?
Well, all you got to do is seek the consult. You don't even need a referral of a urologist. I mean, male fertility, infertility falls under the purview of the specialty of urology. But obviously, we have to work in conjunction with the gynecologist, who at the same time will be working up the female. So certain things you have to look at the female, and a lot of times couples will come to me, and I'll question the wife or the girlfriend at the same time, and we'll say, do you have regular periods? Do you have issues with polycystic ovaries? Do you have problems with endometriosis? Did you have issues with failed pregnancies in the past or miscarriages in the past? You always have to ask the question, do you have any children? How old are these children? Are they with your current wife or with somebody else? So did you have any major surgery? Was there any cancer history? Did you receive any radiation? Did you receive any chemotherapy? For a male, you have to look at the body mass index. Are you overweight? Are you diabetic? Do you possibly have obstructive sleep apnea, which can lower your testosterone? And lack of sleep could also affect your sperm production. The number one cause of male infertility is actually varicoceles. Most men don't understand what a varicocele is. So I'll look at it in terms of, it's basically a distension of the testicular vein. It's similar to varicocele, or similar to varicose veins, which essentially is a ballooning of the venous blood within the vein, because blood goes away from the heart with arteries and goes back with veins. And the veins are going back to the heart, they're going against gravity, and you have valves that allow it to go up against gravity without falling down. And sometimes there's an inherent dysfunction of the actual valves. So you have basically a sludging of the venous blood within the scrotum itself, a distension of the testicular vein, which is called a varicocele. And varicoceles can negatively impact your testosterone production and your sperm production by firstly disrupting the environment, firstly in terms of temperature of the scrotum itself and the testicles that allow you to produce sperm. So that's the first thing we're going to rule out. So the first thing when we ask about varicocele is, a lot of times it only manifests clinically is when you're exerting yourself. When you're in the gym, you're lifting thing heavy, or you're straining when you're constipated, you're going to all of a sudden have some pain in your scrotum, separate from your testicles, that sometimes radiates to your lower abdomen, your lower pelvis in that same region, because that's where the vein goes. The vein goes from your scrotum up into your pelvis itself. So if that happens, we just have to do a quick examination. Sometimes we need to confirm that with an ultrasound, but usually asking a patient to, sometimes you have to ask them to stand to do it, but you ask them to bear down, or almost you might ask them to put the back of their hand to their mouth and you blow against it like you're blowing a balloon. It's called eliciting a Valsalva maneuver. You're just basically straining down. And that maneuver should, if you do have a varicocele, elicit a distension of the actual testicular vein, whether it's on the left side or on the right side.
So what do you do for that? And I remember, I mean, again, I'm not a urologist, I don't do this, but I remember, you know, people talk about this like worm-like feeling just above your testicle.
Yes.
And so what do you do for that then, if someone's complaining of
So just that? Because you have a varicocele doesn't necessarily mean that you have abnormal sperm production or abnormal sperm parameters. First, you're going to do is do a sperm analysis. Even if separate from there being possibly any male infertility or failure to conceive, if you do have symptomatic varicoceles,
right,
it can inhibit every aspect of your life. Every time you walk up the stairs, you're going to have pain. Every time you want to be sexually active, you're going to have pain. Every time you go to the gym or want to swim, you're going to have pain. So that can be very disconcerting. That can negatively impact the quality of your life. And you can have varicoceles even in preteens. It's very common. So we need to determine if it's symptomatic. Even if your sperm analysis is normal, that might have brought you in. A lot of men will complain about their pain internally. They won't even tell their spouse. But if we were to ask the important questions and draw out that information, you say, yeah, you know what? The reason I stopped going to the gym is because every time I do anything on the treadmill, every time I lift any weights, I'm having 8 out of 10 scrotal pain, and it goes into my lower abdomen and I got to stop. Then a lot of times the wife or the girlfriend will be shocked because they never knew that information. They just thought they quit the gym because they had no more motivation to get healthy. So that in itself, we can do a varicocele repair.
So how common is this? I mean, you say, well, how common is it overall? And how many men are symptomatic versus asymptomatic?
So
and that require treatment?
Yeah, so maybe as many as 1 in 9 men actually have varicose seals. A lot of men live with mild pain, or some studies say 1 in 12. Yeah, it's relatively common. And it's even more common in men who have male infertility. But a lot of men just ignore it.
We just ignore it, yeah.
Particularly, they don't want to, they think pain in the scrotum, oh, I have testicular cancer. Let me not even go to a urologist to check it out. First of all, testicular cancer. God has made us, in terms of race, unfortunately, black men have got a raw deal, a bad hand in terms of prostate cancer. We have a lot higher incidence of prostate cancer. It usually afflicts us 10 years or 7 years earlier than our other racial counterparts, particularly Caucasian. It's usually a more aggressive form of the disease. But in terms of testicular cancer, it's relatively rare for black men. In fact, I rarely see it. Obviously, when I do see it, unfortunately, it's usually quite advanced. But I can go a whole year and I see a large population of men, and I won't see it. I know certain colleagues of mine live in predominantly black countries, African countries in particular, and they've never seen a testicular cancer in their busy practice in their entire career. Then you look at certain places, you might go to New York, you might want to go to Germany. They see it all the time. A week doesn't go by that they don't pick up a test. When I trained in Cape Town, I used to see it all the time, particularly in the Caucasian men. Or even Caucasian teenagers. When I was in Germany, the same thing. When I was when I was in France, it was very, very common. Very, very common. So anytime you have any pain, and we've talked about this all the time, we spoke about this week, please go to a physician that you trust, and whatever is said stays within the confines of a confidential environment, and please seek help, because something very sinister may be going on. Although you shouldn't use that fear to stop you from going to seek help, but that can save your life. If you should be, every time you shower, every time you bathe, at least a couple times a month, do a conscious examination of your scrotum, of your testicles.
So it's just like breast self-examination.
Very much
scrotal
so.
Self-examination.
Yeah, so you should know that there's something abnormal, and not everything, there are a lot of things down there in your scrotum that can feel abnormal, and they have nothing to do.
I don't know how much men do that, right? Because nobody ever talks about men just doing scrotal self-examination.
And I mean, a lot of men will have pain. We would talk about working out or straining or doing anything else. And as a general surgeon, you also see it. I see it, and that's an inguinal scrotal hernia.
Right.
Yeah. So you can actually have your omentum within your bowel or your bowel contents actually going into your scrotum and giving you pain every time you exercise.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, that'll be an obvious swelling in the groin, and then that goes into the testicle. But we're talking about testicular swelling, and the only way really to determine that, you would say, or one of the ways, is self-examination and then bringing that to the attention of your physician.
Yeah, and something that's very common, particularly as you get older, middle age and older, and that's what we call a hydrocele. So the testicle itself is covered by a tissue called the tunica vaginalis, which has fluid within it. It's basically a protective barrier. So if you get knocked in your testicle, that fluid will be like a barrier, a protective barrier that doesn't allow the testicle to directly be hit by any blunt trauma. As time goes on, that tunica vaginalis will absorb and produce fluid. And sometimes, as you get older, the rate of fluid production stays approximately the same, but the reabsorption rate by that inner lining surrounding the testicles slows down. So the cumulative effect is you're going to get an increase in the amount of fluid around the testicle, and a lot of men think like their balls are falling down, or the testicles are getting a lot larger. And it's that the fluid is pulling down, in many cases, that scrotum.
And in most cases, this is painless.
It can get painful as it stretches and it becomes very... Some men can't even cross their legs. Every time they move, they're in pain. So a lot of men, again, they wait till the last minute, because this has been happening for years, until they just can't go on anymore, or they can't wear a pair of shorts because you can see this... grapefruit down in their scrotum, and they don't want to, if they're dating, they don't want to be intimate, even within their undressing. They don't want to go change in the changing room.
And sometimes it's often mistaken for a hernia.
Very much so. Yeah. So it can be very confusing. Some hernias are not reducible.
Right.
So some hernias are going to be stay there. They're going to be strangling.
So either way, you should get it checked out. I mean,
they're very common.
Right.
Hernias are very common.
If hernias are very down common. There, yes. I mean, and you can't reduce it. That's almost an emergency or urgent. That's an urgent case that needs to be done.
It can become strangulated, right, particularly right. If it's bowel. You can get a compromise of the bowel blood supply, right. And that bowel can become necrotic, gangrenous, lead to sepsis,
and that could
lead to your death.
Yeah.
So a simple thing like a hernia can actually lead to your death.
Yeah, it can kill people, yes.
And I've seen it, you've seen it.
Yes.
You've seen
yes.
it, I've seen it.
You've seen
it.
People come in very, very sick
yeah.
from hernias. But the thing is, again, and I always stress, these things don't happen overnight.
Yes. Very much so.
You know? Right?
So in terms of looking at what are the things that are causing worldwide or even in the Bahamas for our fertility levels to fall? And that, we look at certain things like environmental factors. Obviously, we know we're using more pesticides, insecticides. There are more hormones in the foods that we produce. Then if you should always try to eat organic if you can. Obviously, organic is more expensive. You look at even the hygiene products that we use, they can have harmful chemicals, plastics, industrial chemicals. All of those can disrupt the endocrine system and lead to decreased sperm production and decrease in sperm quality. You look at lifestyle factors, we are a very unhealthy nation. We look at poor diet, sedentary lifestyle, not enough exercise, obesity. Obesity has a very important role in terms of male infertility. Obesity also leads to insulin resistance. It also leads to low testosterone. It leads to sleep apnea, which all of those things can lead to low testosterone and metabolic syndrome. That can lead to poor sperm production and poor sperm motility as well. Smoking. You shouldn't be smoking. You shouldn't have any kind of nicotine, whether that's cigars, which men don't want to hear. They always get upset with me. They'll say, oh, they don't inhale. At least a cigarette has a filter. Vaping's even more hazardous to your health than smoking per se. So a lot of people vape and think that it's innocuous, it's benign. Vaping can affect women in terms of their fertility, can affect men in terms of their fertility, can lead to DNA damage of the sperm itself. It can lead to decreased sperm count. It can lead to impaired sperm motility. Alcohol. Men are not going to like to hear this, but alcohol can impact negatively your testosterone level, which will in fact lead to decreased sperm production. So the first thing I'm going to do is, obviously, with any patient you see, you take a thorough history. What is your alcohol intake? Are you smoking? What are you smoking? Are you getting any exercise? What chronic illnesses do you have? Do you use any recreational drugs? I'm not here to judge you, but I want to help you. Some of the greatest joy I have is to see a couple that haven't been able to conceive for 5 years, 8 years, and within 6 months, they get pregnant, and they love me for life, and I feel...
Well, that's provided that it's on the male side.
Well, yes. Right. Yes, okay. Exactly that. But at least I can work with the gynecologist to help them get the best gynecological care and get them on the road. And at least ruling out a problem on the male side is just as important as finding the problem and solving it. Okay, good evening. We have a call coming in. This is Urologist okay. Speaks.
Hey, Doc.
Yes.
Doc.
Yes. Yes, sir.
This doctor, you know, I along with you on your gear. Let me ask you something. Now, you described, I sat down and I listened to you straight through. It seems as if as though our problem is the food in which we eat. So why is it that, are you on any board whereby you give consent certain food to come into this country?
No, that's above my pay grade, but I'm here trying to give public advice and information. Yes.
Doc, why is it that you don't get in with the government to make the government know what's happening so we can be a healthier nation?
There are many ways of doing that. I've been writing an article, health article, on various topics for every single week, and I'm talking about a different topic for the last 8 years. So that's my public service. I'm here with Dr. Francis trying to enlighten the public on many health issues. So we all have different ways of doing things. I know Dr. Francis has been on many boards and had many important positions.
I've been on one board.
Okay, so he can speak more about that. He's had the power.
The thing is, we're still so sick.
I agree. But as I say, information is so important. If we were to enlighten just one person, if I were to have somebody come in and prevent them from dying an unnecessary death of prostate cancer or breast cancer, or prevent them from going down the road of becoming a diabetic, or we're talking about this male infertility.
Thank you for what you're doing, Doc.
I appreciate it. With God's good grace, we are here trying to help the nation that we both love. We're both proud Bahamians trying to not just be negative and say that there's nothing that can be done. We're here trying to say, you know what, there are positive things that can be done. It's not going to change things overnight, but hopefully things slowly but surely are going to change, and we can become a healthy nation. Slowly but surely we can do it. And there are things that I always speak about, and we speak about this, Dr. Francis, is that there's no need for anyone to have cervical cancer. Why are there so many women being diagnosed every week, every other week in this country with not just cervical cancer, but stage 3, stage 4 cervical cancer? Many of them in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s have their whole life ahead of them. Even if they're diagnosed when they're 80, it's a tragedy, because no one needs to be diagnosed with cervical cancer, particularly those who have been in their 20s or 25 or 30, because
we have a preventive tool.
We have a preventive tool that's been around since 2009, 2010.
Long time.
So all you need to do is go to your government clinic, go to your pediatrician, go to your general practitioner, go to your urologist, go to anyone. We can direct you to get a free vaccine that prevents you from getting HPV, which can prevent a lot of other cancers for men and women.
Right.
And HPV in itself can, along with many sexually transmitted illnesses, can lead to infertility as well. Let's talk about that as well. But no one needs to be dying of cervical cancer.
Absolutely not. And I mean, we always bash the government, right? And when I say the government, I don't mean any particular party. I'm just talking about overall, from a health perspective. I mean, just having the general population have access to HPV vaccine. That's tremendous. That's a significant thing.
It can be life-saving.
It is life-saving.
I mean, but as a surgical oncologist, I've seen it, but I've seen it, because anytime anyone has advanced cervical cancer, it's referred to from the oncological gynecologist to
the
urology.
I don't treat much of that.
Okay.
That's gyne-oncology. But still, the numbers are startling.
And
I mean, it's unnecessary.
First of all, many of these women die of renal failure. All of them are depressed.
It's a painful death.
Many of them, they have obstruction of their kidneys and their ureter, which are the tubes that lead from the kidney to the bladder, by their advanced disease. The smell of the gangrene, the rotting flesh that comes from the vagina, is horrible. It's putrid. I mean, it's
one vaccine could fix that.
Literally, you go in the gynecology ward, and as soon as you hit that ward or going down the corridor, you know someone has advanced cervical cancer, because the smell is so unbearable. Imagine that when you're 28 years old and you have two young kids and you're slowly dying, and we're trying to provide you palliative care. It can actually lead to fistula. When you have advanced disease, you could actually have stool coming out of your vagina. And
these are complex problems.
These are
not
complex
easy to fix.
Easy to fix. Sometimes we have a nephrostomy tube, where you basically have a tube going directly into your kidney, where you're draining urine into a bag. What kind of life is that? Or we need to divert from all this advanced cancer within your pelvis. We want to divert your urine, creating a stoma. We put the two ureters with your small bowel, and you just have a bag in your abdomen. What collects the urine?
So I think the take home is really for people to take advantage of what is available to us. Yeah, we have challenges. We have a lot of challenges, but we do have a lot of programs that are helpful.
And no one needs to get cervical cancer,
right? And
so young boys, preteens, 11, 12, 13, you can even get it up to the age of 20.
Isn't it, boys and girls?
Boys, right? And girls.
Because penile cancer is an issue.
And you can, right? Get head and neck cancers as well.
Yes.
You can get head and neck cancers as well. Or the last thing you want is a husband to give a cervical cancer, or a boyfriend to give to someone that they love and see them die unnecessary death from cervical cancer.
It's unconscionable. I mean, I think people should do it.
It's a tragedy,
right?
If you were just to see one woman with her whole life ahead of them, many of them have children, many of them have a husband, they have a career, and to see them die, and there's little that we can do to help them. And they die a prolonged, difficult death out of hospital, smelling horrible, to the point people can't even live in the same house with them because the smell is so putrid. We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Dr. Pinto, I'm calling to find out if you deal with hemorrhoids in men. And if you do, can you elaborate on it a second?
So hemorrhoids obviously I had to do general surgery before I did urology. And yes, I had to deal with hemorrhoids. But the general surgeon right here is Dr. Wesley Francis. Let him enlighten you.
Well everybody has hemorrhoids, right? And the reason for hemorrhoids is to allow for a cushion. Did we lose him? It's to allow for a cushion, really. To the passage of stool, and when hemorrhoids flare up, then it can cause a significant amount of pain, bleeding for people. But a lot of treatment for hemorrhoid is non-surgical, and it has a lot to do with behavior, and you know, having enough dietary fiber, drinking enough water. And when you go into the toilet, and this is what I tell all my patients, when you go into the toilet, it's supposed to be business. You just go there, you know, do what you got to do and get up. It's not a place to go and relax and read a paper or stay on your phone.
And another thing that you always say, if you see blood,
okay, right,
don't assume it's hemorrhoids.
It's not, you cannot assume it's hemorrhoids. If you see blood, you have to make sure that there's everything else is ruled out before we say, you know, it's hemorrhoids. Now, there are non-surgical options for hemorrhoid treatment, and then there's surgical options. And when I see patients with hemorrhoids, I always give them a trial of non-surgical because, you know, hemorrhoid surgery is painful. And so I always encourage people to, listen, change their, the way that they, in their diet, the amount of water that they drink, and then, you know, the way they use the toilet. Before, and I would not operate for at least 2 to 3 months before we get to the time when I said, you know, we failed conservative treatment before we offer surgery. And there are many options for surgery, and it really basically is tailored to the exact problem that you have.
And there are so many people out there, particularly men, who suffer for years with hemorrhoids. They can't even sit down without pain. What kind of life is that? And they just ignore the problem and they're afraid. So they've ruled out anything sinister like colorectal cancer. At least they've done that. But they'll admit they get flare-ups or hemorrhoids, and they'll come in the office, or I'll actually see them in the office, and they're standing up because they said, you know, it's just too painful to sit down.
It's painful. It's a painful, it's a literal pain in the behind, right?
And then they impose constipation on themselves because it's so painful to defecate that they avoid it at all costs.
Right. And then the more you avoid, the more you get more constipated, and then it becomes a difficult problem to deal with. I think we have a break.
We have a break. We'll talk more about this interesting topic and others on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to GuardianTalkRadio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there'll be no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and Bahamian Surgical Oncologist and General Surgeon Dr. Wesley Francis. We're talking about male infertility and the looming spermageddon, worsening male infertility in the Bahamas and worldwide. And I admit, over the last more than 15 years, I see more and more males with infertility and couples who are very despondent and in the point of despair in terms of trying to conceive a child. And then you can imagine the frustration. And a lot of men, it takes a toll on them. And they could even have what we could even call situational erectile dysfunction because of performance anxiety, because they just feel they're inadequate. They feel actual trying to conceive a child has become almost like a mechanical thing where they're trying to be intimate as many times to increase the likelihood of conceiving. And to see your loved one get her period or get her period a little bit late, and then the devastation, and sometimes it's not goes on just not for months, but for years and years and years, and then they just lose hope. And as I said, couples often blame each other needlessly and seek help. If at least wait a year, if it goes to a year and a half, definitely seek the consult of a urologist and a gynecologist and make sure everything is right. And the things that can be done. A lot of persons take supplements. The AUA, for example, American Urology Association, do not specifically recommend any supplements in terms of the topic of male fertility. There's no high-level evidence that really significantly helps. But if you were to take any supplements, omega-3 fatty acids actually can improve your sperm quality and sperm numbers in many long-term studies. L-carnitine daily in terms of either a 1 milligram intramuscular injection every day, which has to be prescribed, it's under prescription, or 5 milligrams of L-carnitine daily also helps. Selenium, zinc, some studies show have some minimal effect, but taking 20 different supplements is not solving the problem. You need to determine what is the root cause of your male infertility.
So, I mean, when you look at couples undergoing infertility treatment, I mean, women tend to go through a whole lot of battery of testing, painful injections sometimes, and just to sometimes, you know, fail. It must take a toll on their lives. Are there any mental health support systems for people who are undergoing fertility treatment?
Well, as a urologist, I would anticipate there going to be a mental toll on not just male and female. And I always encourage couples to come and see me together because they're going through it together.
Right, right.
So the male shouldn't be coming alone. And when vice versa, when they go to the gynecologist, the male should be there to support as well because they're trying to overcome a problem. They're trying to conceive a child together. They're trying to raise that child together. They're trying to create a family. So let them go through it together, let them lean on each other. You're always going to have positive words of advice. if I can see that things that can be done, either in behavioral modification, diet modification, if you want to lose weight, obviously you got to stop drinking alcohol. In fact, you shouldn't be drinking alcohol, but sparingly when you're trying to get your wife pregnant or from pregnant, you shouldn't be smoking at all. You can't use the excuse of, oh, I'm only smoking outside. That nicotine, that smoke, those carcinogens permeate your clothes, permeate your skin, permeate your hair follicles, and you're going to carry it with you. And whether you're trying to conceive or you have a young child, you shouldn't be smoking. Make that sacrifice, because vaping, nicotine, cigarette smoking, cigar smoking can denature your DNA and cause chromosomal abnormalities as well.
How much men are actually compliant with these treatment options?
Well, the motivation is to have a child. So that in itself, to see your loved one crying every time she gets her period and she's been dreaming of having a child, going to church more than they've ever gone to church ever, praying to God every night, that in itself is a motivation.
I can imagine most fellas who, if it is that, is determined that they may be the problem. There's usually some denial there, I'm pretty sure.
Very much so, but I would avoid using words like problem or play the blame game.
Okay.
I'll just say that there are some health issues
challenges
that we can correct. And I'll always give the backup plan, the worst case scenario. You have very few sperm. So in terms of fertility, the most important thing is a hospitable uterus and eggs that can be fertilized. Because, as I said at the onset of this show, that even if you have a few sperm that don't even have any motility, because of reproductive assisted technology, you can do ICSI, you can inject that sperm directly into the egg after comprehensive DNA analysis to make sure there's no denaturing or any chromosomal abnormalities. And that means you can have a few sperm that don't even move, and you can have a child. And not only that, when you do IVF, you always put in two fertilized eggs. So statistics will show that you have about a 42 to 46% chance of actually having twins. So you can imagine that. You go through 8-10 years of disappointment, and then all of a sudden you're blessed with twins on one setting. So there's always hope, and I've seen that all the time.
And I think that's what we need to emphasize to men, because there is hope. There may be some physical challenge or some physiological or pathology going on. I mean, with all of the reproductive technology or assistance, it's not a well, and the success rate is high.
There's surrogates as well. They're donated eggs as well. Let's say that the female doesn't have any embryos that are viable. You can get a donated embryo through in vitro fertilization, use the male's egg sperm. Obviously, it's not ideal. You want to have your own progeny with your own DNA and everything else. But when you reach a point when you want to love a child, all that is not that important. Particularly, let's say this is your second marriage. This is your third marriage. You're 60 years old, and you got a 35-year-old.
The second, third marriage.
We're not promoting that, but I'm just saying.
This is your first marriage.
Let's just say that we have an older gentleman.
Right.
And because of that, they have an increased, for example, as you get older, a man probably can have a child in their 80s. But
absolutely.
But you have to look at the DNA denaturing as time goes on. You'll have an increased risk. It goes by half decades. Every 5 years, you have a certain increased risk of having a child with autism. It's not a significant increase. So we go from 30 to 35, 35 to 40, 45, 50, whatever, you have an increased risk. So if you're 65, you're going to have a higher risk of having a child who's autistic than a 25-year-old or a 30-year-old. So you also have to put that in mind. If a woman is older than 42, particularly older than 44, there's an exponentially increased risk of having Down syndrome. There's an increased risk of having many things, having a child with cerebral palsy, having a miscarriage. So you always have to put things in perspective. There's a shelf. We define women are defined to have high-risk pregnancies at the age of 35. Mm-hmm. So you have to be mindful of that. A lot of women and men are very motivated in their careers. They don't have time for marriage. They don't have time for children. And they may wait until their 40s. That's a lot for a male than for a female. But once a woman reaches 40, I would always say, okay, if you're on the career path, you don't have time for a child right at this point. You do have it in your heart to have it one time in your life. Possibly, maybe not. You're going to freeze your eggs. Freeze your eggs when you're 32. Freeze those eggs at 32. So maybe you got to use them when you're 40.
How much that actually cost? Because I think I'm sure our listeners want to know. You talk about all these reproductive technology assistance.
It all depends. And
the most
important thing is to go
it's
to
probably
a
probably not insured. It's probably not covered by insurance either, right? This is out of pocket.
This is out of pocket, unfortunately.
Right. Okay.
But instead of buying a secondhand car, most people would rather have a child.
There's a value judgment.
Yes.
So we're talking like what kind of ballpark? I'm sure you don't know exactly.
I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I refer people all the time. So one of the centers of excellence in the Caribbean is in Barbados.
In Barbados, yeah.
There are some places in Puerto Rico. I always even recommend some persons to go. There's some centers of excellence.
Yeah.
And they are some of the best in the world. They may not even be in first world countries, but they have certain places where they cater to foreigners. So if you go and get it done in the States, it might be $15,000, $18,000, $20,000 a pop. But if you go to a place where you look at the conversion from U.S. to their dollar, it may end up being $3,000, $4,000, and they're on a level with any institute in the world. So you can have an extended vacation somewhere, get this fertility treatment, and come back, and you can save a whole lot of money. And usually, if it's not even successful the first time, a woman will get drugs to let them increase the number of embryos produced. Sometimes, even as urologists, we'll put you on medication. Men and women can be put on clomiphene. That'll increase not only your sperm numbers, but your embryo production as well. But there's always a way. Worst case scenario, there's always a way. So it might be $9,000. If you go to certain centers of excellence at other countries, you can possibly get it done for $4,000. But in the States, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be $15,000. It's going to be $18,000. It can even be higher in the amount of $20,000.
I know Barbados and Jamaica, they have centers.
Yes, yes. And then there's ICI as well. So you can actually extract the sperm and deliver it right into the fallopian tubes. That is done even here locally. So there's so many different ways that things can be done. Never give up hope. But the most important thing, just like erectile function, it's just a microcosm of your health. If you're in good health, your chances of having good sperm is a lot higher. If you're unhealthy, that's going to be a problem. If you have unhealthy choices in terms of alcohol, in terms of nicotine, I'll even talk about it, and this can be very controversial. Many studies have shown that marijuana, particularly excessive marijuana use, can lead to decreased sperm production. Of course, the counter is, I know dozens of Rastas who have 20 children. Yes, so it's not for everyone. But if someone comes to me and they're frustrated and they feel like less than a man, and they have found on more than one sperm analysis, and I said sperm analysis, you have to do at least two, and has to be done at least 2.5 to 3 months apart. Ideally, when you do the sperm analysis, you want to have done it when you have abstained for at least 3 days. That's the opportune number. You don't want to, if it's too many days, you're not going to get an accurate picture of your in terms of sperm analysis. If it's too few, again, the same thing. So 3 days is the ideal. A lot of persons are not going to be able to be comfortable giving at the lab. So choose a lab that's reputable. Choose a lab that's close to your home. Give that sample when there's not going to be a lot of traffic. You don't want to expose that to sunlight. You don't want to expose it to extremes of heat or cold. A lot of times we'll just say you give the sample, you put it in your front pocket, you drive directly to the lab within hopefully 20 minutes and give it, and that is sufficient. But just because you have normal sperm parameters doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
And if you have two or three, then we'll look into it. But as a urologist, I'm going to make sure you're not a diabetic, check your HbA1c, make sure you're not in kidney failure. Make sure you're not anemic. I'm going to make sure your free and total testosterone numbers are normal. If they are abnormal, I'm going to make sure, do you have primary or secondary low testosterone hypogonadism? We're going to check your LH, your luteinizing hormone, and your FSH, your follicular stimulating hormone.
It's a pretty extensive workup.
It is an extensive workup. And even
for the males.
Even for the males.
Right, because I know it is an extensive workup for females, but
yeah,
for the males.
And as I said, we're going to rule out varicoceles, because that can, and varicoceles are managed minimally invasive. We don't even enter the scrotum. For the most part, in modern urology, we do it laparoscopically, through the abdomen with a little camera, a little keyhole incision, looking on the, with the long instruments. Right. We basically tie off the offending testicular vein and make sure that it's no longer a problem. Or we can even use a surgical microscope and make a small incision in the groin to also get access to the testicular vein. You can even put sclerosing agents into the offending testicular vein as well. So,
and this is all outpatient.
This is all outpatient. Right. So, and as I said, it can happen with preteens and teens as well, and many of them go to school the next day. No issues. So it's little keyhole incisions, no deep cuts through numerous layers of muscle that needs to recovery. You don't even have any scars. We close it up, you don't, and you wouldn't even know after a few weeks to a month that anything was ever done. It can change your life, even in terms of being able to increase your likelihood of having a child, but also not having pain every time you bear down, which you're going to do several times, particularly if you have an active lifestyle, which you should be exercising.
Yeah.
Every time you bear down, you have excruciating pain in your scrotum that radiates to your lower abdomen and makes you stop in your tracks. That's no way to live. So you always do something. Never give up hope.
Right, right. So we've talked about the cost. And
we'll look at other factors. You look at stress. Right. Stress can also play a role. Sleep deprivation.
Yeah, in everything, right?
In everything.
Right. So what about you know, I'm really curious to know, and I would poll, if we could do a poll of men out there who actually do a scrotal self-exam. Because I find that very interesting. I mean, you know, we encourage women to do breast self-exam.
Really,
how many men do that, you know?
I would say very few, because many times when I'll do an exam and I'll examine someone's scrotum and I'll find a marble-sized epididymal cyst, which is benign and very common, epididymis is a tissue appendage attached to the testicle. It's separate from the testicle. But I touch them and they almost pass out from the pain. And I ask them, do you not bathe down there? Does it? No, not really. I just let the water run in. I don't really examine down there.
Okay, that's a little
different. So now that I've examined it, now that they're aware that they have it, then they realize
it.
But
right.
They should have been feeling that every time they shower and bathe, because it's very prominent. You can feel like a marble is sometimes even bigger. Sometimes you have like two testicles on one side because the cyst is, which is not cancerous. It has no, it's not pre-malignant. But it can be painful as hell because it's rubbing against everything in your scrotum every time you move.
Listen, so if there's anything you could take home from this show tonight, right, is a scrotal self-exam or testicular self-exam, because that's important.
And beware of your male genitalia in general. If you're having any lesions on the penis itself and any discoloration, if you're having anything that's painful, there are too many men who, and it's shocking, who... You say, oh, do you have any problem pulling back your foreskin? You say, no, I'm circumcised when I was a baby. You examine them, they're not circumcised. They've never been able to retract their foreskin in their entire life. They didn't know they had to retract their foreskin. They don't even know what a foreskin is. And you can imagine that you see a 40-year-old, a 45-year-old, a 37-year-old, who in their life has never cleaned the head of their penis, their glands penis. They're just waiting for a serious issue to manifest. And a lot of persons are just not aware. They live in...
So we got to make them more aware, right?
Very much.
And I mean, I don't even know how much physicians or how many physicians actually encourage men to actually do scrotal self-exams.
You must.
I don't know. I mean,
if you're not circumcised, you need to pull back your foreskin every single
day.
You have a son, you have a grandson, you have a nephew, you have to teach them.
You got to pass this on.
And you need to encourage them, and you need to show them, and you need to check with them that they're actually pulling back the foreskin.
There's a white residue called smegma.
And it's not pleasant.
It's not pleasant
and
at all.
And you can have urinary tract infections and increase your risk of a sexually transmitted illness as well. And men suffer if you can't retract your foreskin. Every time you get an erection, and every time you're sexually active, many of them are aware. They keep getting the same lacerations and tears in their foreskin that never heal. Many of them, it becomes infected as well.
And a circumcision just fixed that.
And a circumcision, you're put to sleep. We do it. We put dissolvable sutures. In fact, when you wake up, you have no pain because we give a regional block. We give you a regional block.
You got a little pain when you go home, though.
No, you get a penile block, so you wouldn't have any pain for at least 6 hours. I'm telling you, I do it
when you go home.
Well, if eventually, but for the most part, for kids, you'd be surprised.
We're talking adults here.
Okay, most of them could go to work the next day.
Most men who would undertake a circumcision, I would say most men are probably not very, would want to have a circumcision because they think it may be painful.
Well, a lot of them know that every time they're sexually active, the pain is extreme, and they were begging for a circumcision. I actually see the opposite. Imagine getting lacerations every time you're intimate, and those lacerations never heal, and every time you're intimate again, the same lacerations open up. And you have basically festering wounds that become infected.
That's a problem.
Essentially, you walk and the head of your penis is raw. Your foreskin is raw. You don't want it to touch anything. Even touching your underwear can be excruciatingly painful. Mm-hmm. Those men will beg for a circumcision. Not only that, studies have shown conclusively a circumcision, looking at many countries where HIV is a epidemic, a pandemic.
Yeah.
Doing circumcisions nationally can reduce your chance of getting HIV and all sexually transmitted diseases by as much as 60%.
It totally prevents penile cancer.
Yeah, it does. And it also, it doesn't affect your sexual prowess. It doesn't affect your sexual enjoyment. You don't even need a dressing the next day. You can shower just a little bit gentle in that area. And you go about your business. And that can save your life because the inner foreskin of receptors, conduits, that are perfect receptors to transmit viruses. Whether it's HPV, whether it's hepatitis, whether it's HIV. And hepatitis could actually be more deadly in this age than HIV, leading to a liver cancer. HIV is almost become, in many places in the world, with antiretrovirals, no worse than diabetes.
Yeah, it's just a chronic disease.
It's a chronic disease
can
where
be controlled and
for
treated.
Many, no one should be dying of HIV as well. That's another subject. So you can, a lot of persons believe that you are
and
HIV
again,
positive.
These are drugs that are accessible.
Easily accessible for free.
For free, right.
And you can be seen confidentially. No one knows your business, et cetera, et cetera. I speak about this all the time. This is a country of sweethearting. If you're going to sweetheart, use a condom because, as I said last week and I say all the time, and I'll say to my patients, you don't want to leave anything there in terms of a child that can ruin your life, your marriage, and you financially, and have a woman. Many of these sweethearts are very manipulative. They may be sweet, but they're very manipulative and they have an agenda and only with you because of what they can get from you. And you don't want to take anything home. I've seen women get sexually transmitted diseases and their faithful wives to their husbands. I've seen wives stick with their husbands who brought home HIV to them. Mm-hmm. And they just feel that no one else is going to want them, so they just have to live that life where they accept the fact that their husband was unfaithful, had no regard for them or their children or anything else, and brought HIV home. You don't want to live like that. No. That regret will eat away with you like a cancer. And there's no need for it.
Right.
So there's so many reasons you should be using a condom. If the economics of your family mean that this is a very expensive country to live in, one of the more expensive countries in the world, if you have two children and two children are all you want, use some form of protection or get a vasectomy. A vasectomy is done scalpelless now, a little puncture technique, takes 15 minutes. You still have the same sexual drive, same erections, you're still ejaculating. The only thing is that if you look under a microscope, you don't have the sperm and an ejaculate. You're still producing the sperm. It goes at the end of the tube that is tied off your vas deferens on both sides. Sperm is a protein that's harmlessly reabsorbed by the body. You don't do a vasectomy with the thought of reversing it, but if circumstances change, you could always reverse it. Particularly, it's quite easy within the first 2 years. 5 years, a little bit harder. Beyond 5 years, you probably need to go to a specialist who deals with that. But it can be reversed. So a lot of women are suffering because of birth control, and I think that's a great topic for us to have the side effects of birth control. You can lead to a deep vein thrombosis. It can lead to pulmonary embolus.
The weight gain.
Yeah, women don't even recognize themselves.
Yeah.
The mood swings, the irritability, the depression. It can cause a lot of horrible side effects that can be avoided, because the only true way that you can avoid having a child is a vasectomy. Even a tubal ligation is not 100%. A vasectomy is. And a tubal ligation is a lot more invasive than a vasectomy that we can do on your lunch hour, even when you're awake. All we do is numb the area, or we give you a little bit of conscious sedation. Obviously, the psyche of most Bahamian men or residents, they don't want anyone dealing with them down there or tying up anything when they're awake.
That is true.
The vast majority, they may come in the office saying, you know what, I don't want anesthesia. But I say, you know what, any procedure, this is the definition of minimally invasive, quick. You got to get reviewed by anesthesiologists. We have excellent anesthesiologists. If you're medically optimized, they'll determine if it's safe to be put to sleep. There's no issues with being put to sleep. The first thing you do when you wake up is you had the best sleep of your life, and you're going to ask, when does the procedure start? And you're going to say, it's almost time to go home. So don't avoid having a vasectomy because of fear. It doesn't make you any less a man. In fact, it'll make you more of a man, because you're making that sacrifice because you don't want to have your family put in jeopardy economically, or you don't want your sweetheart getting pregnant.
So take home then, men should do scrotal self-exams.
They should do scrotal self-exams. If a couple is suffering with failure to conceive for more than a year, give it a year, because you only got about 15% chance of getting pregnant every month. Please seek the consult of a gynecologist, neurologist. You can always get pregnant no matter what.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us for Good Interesting night. Talk. We'll be back again with another interesting topic. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto and Dr. Wesley Francis.